Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Well, it's Monday again, and so it's Edwin again. Hi, Edwin, how are you going?
Well, it's been a bit of an adrenaline rush this week, Martin. It's coming in from all sides. It's happening. Numbers are going up. People are getting excited. Freedom Week, Freedom Day. Some are getting plastered. Others are stocking up on toilet paper again for the next shortages and whatnot. So yeah, it's a lot of adrenaline flying around.
Well, it is very interesting, isn't it? I mean, if you talk about the number of infections, New South Wales going down, Victoria's going up. New South Wales seems to be sort of leading the way. Well, you know, sort of. The feds don't like it, do they?
No, look, they don't. They don't like it. But the thing is, Martin, it's the science. We got to talk about the science here. You know, numbers in New South Wales are going down. We're going full steam ahead with opening up, and Victoria's want, but they want to follow suit. Dom's got the character. Dom's got the charm. Even Dan's falling in love with our premier and he's following suit. I mean, you know, buddies at heart, and numbers are going up in Victoria and they're opening up. I mean, go figure. It's got to be the science.
Well, it makes you wonder whether the infection model is as advertised, right? Because I don't think that any of those models that were being used a few weeks ago to try and predict what might happen are close, certainly not in New South Wales. And even the ones in Victoria, they're all over the place too. So I've got this big question mark about what is the infection model and do we really know what's going on?
All I know is that the cops out there, they got pulled over the other day, and they wanted to, the cops in New South Wales wanted to. I was actually walking around. I'll change the story a little bit. I was walking around the park, and didn't have my mask on, and I was eating an ice cream, and the cop wanted a taste. I said, what's going on? He says, look, our counterparts in Victoria, we get to taste other people's coffees when they're walking around. I can't see why we can't taste your ice cream. You know, I said, look, it's just a normal paddle pop. You know, I can't afford anything else. So, no, with all seriousness, all the lunacy, it's crazy. But, I think the joke's on that copper down in Melbourne, because that guy didn't have coffee in his coffee cup. You know, I got it on good authority. He had tequila in there, mate.
Of course, I'd expect nothing less from you, Edwin. And what about these listings numbers then? What's going on there?
Well, look, we've had almost a 22% rise in listing numbers in the period of only just a bit over two weeks. We're still about 2.5 short of the highest numbers that we measured last spring, in 2020 spring selling season. But you know what? I'm confident that we're going to get close to it, and that's going to determine what's going to happen out, obviously, in the property market. And as we're going to report later on, it's been a little bit of a 50-50 call on what agents are saying out there. It is just a day's chat with the agents out there, and it is anecdotal, but it's still, nevertheless, it gives us a guide as to where we could be going. With the amount of listings coming on market and what people are going to be doing, and more importantly, what vendors are going to be coerced, encouraged, or conditioned to do when offers start coming in. So it is going to be interesting. So keep an eye on the numbers for the next week. I'm hoping that we're going to get closer to the 7,000, which will be very, very exciting.
What about the open homes? Things aren't quite going to plan, are they?
No, that's right. There have been some wobblies there. As I said, it's been a 50-50 call with what we've been the information we've gathered so far from the agents on Saturday, on the weekend, Sunday, and today. It's interesting that some had one particular agent in the Blacktown LGA. He had three open for inspections, of which he only got two groups of people across the three. Another agent. In the Mid Mountains, he had his office had two, and they had eight groups of people across the board. Where in previous weeks or previous month, they would get upwards of 15, 20 people, 20 interested parties attending, or 20 groups of people attending. So this is rather interesting as to what's happening. The in the Shire, Some of the agents there are telling us, yeah, they're still inundated with a lot of inquiry. Obviously, you know, it's God's country, so everybody wants to live there. And, you know, in the North Shore, it's a bit of a 50-50 call as well with the agents up there. But one thing I'm noticing more, Martin, is the fact that I'm getting a lot more, direct messages from agents, calls, text messages and emails saying we've got this off market, you know, genuine off market stuff, and they're wanting us to have a look at or to see if we've got clients for them. I posted something up on Twitter earlier today where an agent that would otherwise only have one or two listings every other week that would send us to see if we had any interested parties for it. Today she sent us five. First cab off the rank, and that was rather interesting in the North Shore in her area. So it's let's see how the numbers stack up. But I think the buyers are getting a little bit excited. But I think it's just hold the line a little bit, and I'm hoping to see that 7,000 freestanding homes on market this week.
Yeah, and of course a bit of jostling among agents, but a bit of jostling among the banks as well, because CBA cut their variable rate by 40 basis points, then lifted their fixed rates, the further out rates, right? So what they're now doing is directing people more towards the variable rates. I think they might know something about where rates are going ahead.
Well, look, that's right. And they're also jostling for the best for the best market or the best clients. So, you know, obviously nobody wants to have the clients on their books that are that, you know, jobs are sketchy, or they're going to have a reduction in hours, or the pays are going to be cut because they don't want to go into the office, they want to work from home. All these things are happening. There's a lot of chatter around that with the banking institutions, with mortgage brokers. And yeah, so I get the feeling that banks are sort of jostling for position with regards to keeping what they would deem to be the better candidates or the better mortgage holders on their side and making great offers and not be too bothered as to the others that are going to be, look, if you're going to be stifled by a 50 point or even a 75 point uptick in the interest rates, well, you're in a lot of trouble as it is anyway. So and obviously they're the people that the banks don't want to have on their books.
Well, that's why they're offering the deepest discounts on those rates to LVRs below 75%, right? In other words, at least 25%, money in the bank, as it were, whereas the higher loan-to-value ratio loans, nowhere near the same discount. So they're being selective, picky, you know. As you say, finding those low-risk households, those with equity, those that are going to be able to weather any rate rises. And I think all this all bodes quite concerningly, actually, for many people who've committed themselves to very large mortgages at very low rates, but actually might be facing ahead, not necessarily immediately, but ahead quite quickly, a rise in rates. And the yield curves, of course, today have gone through the roof. So whether you look at the 3-year or the 5-year or even the 10-year, right, those rates are up as well. So it looks to me as though interest rates are coming a lot sooner than Mr. Lowe thought.
Yeah, and the unfortunate thing, Martin, is the first-time buyers are the people that just went into the market for the purpose of having a principal place of residence, not interested in necessarily looking at a property as an investment or as as a quick get-rich-quick money scheme. They looked at it simply for to house the families, the young families, or themselves. And unfortunately, they're the ones that have come in with the higher LVRs, and they're the ones that are going to be in a lot of pressure, a lot of problems if they aren't able to sustain their lifestyle. And with inflation on the rise, the supply chains, creating more issues. Petrol's almost close to $2 a litre now, which is absolutely flabbergasting, considering that 2 weeks ago, I was getting it in certain petrol stations for $1.49, and over the weekend, I paid something like $1.86, and it's the packagings are getting smaller. The croissants that Dusty and Evan love so much, they seem to be getting smaller as well, Martin. It's you order a ham and cheese croissant, says that we could share it at home, and you only get a half a slice of cheese in it, and a quarter of a slice of ham, and it's just not enough to go around. We have to draw straws as to who gets the first bite.
Right. And of course, that's the point, isn't it? Because inflation can be higher prices, but inflation can also be represented by smaller quantities for the same price. And you're right. If you walk around the supermarkets these days, you see that in spades.
Yeah, and look, as I've said jokingly, charmingly, in the way I've said it in on a previous podcast, I'm looking at, you know, we're looking at doing a lot of recycling, and hence the reason why some of our veggie beds are high, because we're trying to make use of the materials that we have around. Because when you go out and try to buy timber, you buy corrugated iron or sheets in order to do something, it's getting very expensive. So rather than throwing it out, we're just making do with what's around, rather than throwing it, putting it in a skip bin and getting charged for it anyway. It's something like even that's gone from I think $320 a ton for disposing of the rubbish to something like $460 a ton. So nothing's getting cheaper, and everything's getting costlier, and the lifestyles are going to be really hindered moving forward. Let alone having to manage a $2 million or a $2.5 million mortgage when you may have got an 80% LVR, or in some cases, you know, a 90% LVR, or you may have come in with a 70% LVR or 65% LVR, and then you've leveraged off that to buy an investment property that's not necessarily going to perform. So yeah, all these people are going to be in a conundrum moving forward, and this is what we say: just got to be careful and keep to a game plan. And predominantly, what we've spoken about many a time over and over again, it's just more to do with housing your family. Yeah, providing a good home, a good environment, and a lifestyle for yourself and your family, first and foremost, before you start looking at going crazy and pulling equity to buy the super duper whiz bang cars and toys and boats and everything else that you, quite frankly, you may not even be using down the track anyway.
Yeah, well, this equity mate thing is very important, right? People don't understand it, right? Just how much money is being pulled out of existing mortgages. In other words, the increased equity is being pulled out, and as you say, to buy investment properties or even to buy more vehicles, a bunch of other things too, build a granny flat in the backyard, whatever it is, right? So quite often this all works, assuming that the value of prices of property continue to rise and interest rates don't rise, but it could certainly come to create significant pressure. And of course, it's been one of the reasons why the GDP number's been quite good, right? So it's an indirect stimulus measure. If you think of all the government money that's flown through the system, well, a lot of it's flown through via equity mate, and bigger mortgages means effectively more money in the system. So they can't go on doing it. Now the question is, what will happen down the road? And if you take that further, another interesting question: crime and hydroponics. What's the connection, Edwin?
Well, we're going to be talking about that later on, as with regards to what we've been hearing on the with all our legal eagles out there that we share information with and we gather information from. Crime is on the rise, and so is the cultivation of that stuff that you and I may have liked to partake of when we were younger, Martin. I'm not saying we're partaking of it now, but maybe you and I partook of it when we were younger. So there's a lot of that going around, and we're going to explore that a little bit more. And our tips also for this week is going to be centered around that as well.
Are you talking about carrots, I assume?
Yeah, carrots, that's it. Carrots. You know, it's catnip.
Exactly right. And just before we get into the detail, then, we should just touch on the WeChat chatters, right? Because there's a few things to touch on there as well.
Well, that's right. Yeah, whilst everybody's been frothing at the mouth with the 2 million, so-called 2 million students and tourists and God knows what else are going to, was supposed to be coming in over the next 3 to 4 years, so that the educational institutions, the tertiary institutions, and also the tourism industry can kick off again. Obviously, the WeChat chatterers are of a different opinion, because they know the landscape of the predominantly what's going on in China politically, and with regards to what they want to do there. And as you and I have been speaking about for quite a few months now, is China decoupling from the Western world and what they're doing and what they've been doing. So they know, and unfortunately, a lot of the tradespeople, a lot of the people, the contractors that we do use, that we do connect with, and you know, we have associations with, they're in a bit of a pickle themselves because they can't get their little brothers, as you recall me sharing about, you know, the little brothers and the little sisters that that are basically the cheap labor that they bring in from China, because for a number of reasons. One is the cost of getting a passport is, you know, by other ways other than the proper channels, because obviously China is not issuing any new passports, but obviously you can get one, you know, through different channels, but that's very costly. And what they call these people that have organized all these things over there in China, they're called the snakeheads. You know, they're asking and they're charging a lot more. So the little brothers and the little sisters, are finding it very difficult and very costly to come to Australia. So the local witcher chatterers are saying, pie in the sky, it's not going to happen. It's a terminology that they use. You know, I won't say it, because if I pronounce it wrong, it'll be very, very bad. But the terminology that they use, the interpretation is the Australian government or the Australian people have, it's like trying to the enthusiasm that news created. It's like trying to have a baby whilst you're watching porn, on your own.
I see. A mind-boggling choir in the corner here. Well, let's talk about mind-boggling, because, of course, our new premier came out a few days ago and said, right, we need to open up and we need to actually get massive migration coming in. And that caused a few storms, didn't it?
Well, that was the story that obviously the premier led with in his first days of power, and wanted to put a stamp on things. But I put out one of the reasons being is because that was so positive about that, and wanted to make that happen, and that was because that's 20 or 25% of the state's revenue is made from stamp duty or duties of the like. You pay duties on your mortgages, you pay duties on your borrowings, on your anything in relation to property, on the property purchase itself. So there's a lot of different ways that the government dips into those transactions, and that makes up for 20 or 22% of the state revenue. So obviously that's been on a down. It was what else could you do other than, and that was where people began to froth at the mouth of as to how they could developers could sell off their apartments that are close to tertiary educations and so forth, and student accommodation, and it was all in, but it was short-lived, Martin. It was short-lived because then our Prime Minister said, no, first and foremost are going to be the Aussies, and rightly so. They should have been back here months ago, if not over a year ago anyway, and they're the ones that are going to have first call, but what a lot of people don't realize, Martin, is the fact that the people that do have the money that are coming in and will be coming in to buy properties are the ones that have already obtained PR residency in the last 2 years. So the students and the tourists that were coming from Asia, they weren't coming to buy property, and that's what the WeChat chatters were saying also. They're not coming in to buy property, they're coming in to work. Predominantly to become ghost, ghost visa holders, and ghost migrants, and to overstay their visas, and basically get very low paying jobs, cash in the hand type jobs, which is predominantly around the in the sectors of the construction industry, in market gardens, as well as the leisure industry, where you get those massages, Martin.
That's right. But it's interesting because, of course, some time ago, Phil Lowe actually made the point that reduced migration would actually help wages growth, right? He argued effectively that one of the reasons why wages growth has been so slack over the last, decade or so, is because of high migration rates. And he argued that if migration stayed on the low side, that would help to lift wages. But the reverse is also true, right? So basically the New South Wales Premier is asking for and arguing for is low wages growth, because high migration naturally leads that way.
Yeah, look, that's right. And the unfortunate thing is that there are jobs that are obviously the yeah, look, for without going into full details and explanation, you've got the farmers and the people that require people that will take on these low paying jobs as the fruit pickers and the vegetable pickers and so forth, but because the agencies make most of the money and the people that actually pick the fruits and pick the go out into the farms to do a lot, some of the picking there, then get paid a great deal. But when you start looking at when you start unraveling all that, you've got to ask yourself who's willing to go out there to become a picker, a fruit picker, or a vegetable picker, whatever whatever you want to pick, and get paid per basket or get paid per kilo that you pick, where it becomes basically a slave labor, and the locals don't want to do that. Whereas these international visa holders. Temporary visa holders, obviously they're willing to do it because they're doing it for different reasons than what we would do it, and they're able to live, even in, as we shared also with the construction groups, with the tradies, how they're living in these communities, and the little brothers live together and they share the food, they share their accommodation, they'll even stay over if you call them to your place. Let's say you were renovating your house, they'll even live in your garage until the works are done, because obviously it's going to mean they spend less and they're able to send more money overseas. So you've got all these issues, but as you said, Martin, that what this low migration has created is a rise in hourly charges. But it's not necessarily going trickling downhill. It's staying with the agencies. It's staying with the developers. It's staying with the heads of organisations that look after these groups. And it's not necessarily trickling down into where it's really required. So it's a lose-lose situation, unfortunately.
I agree, absolutely. Plus, of course, all the infrastructure non-development that has been happening for the last 20-odd years or so. So in a lot of areas, there's a lot of spare property around. Okay, you might get some warm bodies to come and live in those properties, but, of course, it just puts more pressure on the existing infrastructure, the road system, the getting around and everything. So unless it's planned properly, this could be an absolute disaster, as well as the direct issue with regard to the the question of incomes. Another interesting question, Edwin. I think we might have invented a new game. It's called the High-Rise Great Lottery. Right. And basically the game runs like this, right? You go and buy a high rise, right? And then what's the probability of the high rise unit that you've bought basically going to fall over and develop cracks and otherwise, become an absolute liability, right? And the statistical probability is pretty high. That's what you're buying, isn't it?
Look, it's crazy. I think statistically it's what... they said two in five or four in ten, but I think it's a lot higher. That's with major defects. If you included minor defects in there in between, you got a one in 50 chance of getting something good. But then again, Martin, it's what you and I have shared over and over again. People are just not doing the due diligence. Yep. And it's not just a matter of looking at all the shiny bench tops and the staged look and feel of the apartment, but it's also looking at the common areas in the basement. Look at the historical records as to what was there before. Before this apartment complex went up, historical records of, was there any contamination? Is it low-lying land? What are the chances of of floods occurring in the basement? How close are you to the old the old waterways, the natural water easements that are all over Sydney. So all these things that people don't do, and unfortunately, we end up with gems, or as I said on Twitter, we end up with gems, or shall I say, opals in every suburb.
And that's the worrying thing, isn't it, right? This is not just limited to a few suburbs, right? You've got to assume that any high-rise that's been built in the last, let's say, 10 years has a high probability of being poorly constructed. And that means that you need, if you're going to buy there, you need to ask about the builder, you need to ask about the history, you need to ask about, the approvals that were given, all of those things. And actually, I think on a previous show, you made the point, it's really worth talking to people who already live in the place, because a lot of them will tell you a lot more than actually just the structural surveyor who might come and have a look at it. It really is important, particularly now, to do very, very significant due diligence if you are going to buy. And that's important because the chances are that we haven't yet seen the full effects of all the poor buildings, right? It takes time for this to work through. It takes time for, damp to penetrate and those things and cracks to develop. So you can't assume if it looks okay that it is okay, which means due diligence and then more due diligence.
Well, that's correct. It takes time. I've mentioned before, a couple of years back, I think in one of our shows, I mentioned that a building generally takes 2 to 3 years to settle, and to find its place, unless you're Opal Tower. That's still, it's still settling.
Still moving.
Yeah. So you've got these issues that are going on. But then, so people say to me, well, Edwin, well, if it takes 2 to 3 years for a building, so how am I going to know? Well, when I say to friends and families, well, look, go and see what else this builder or this development company has built, and go and look at, see what they're building and whether or not they've stood those buildings have stood the test of time, and who, also importantly, who was the strata manager that they offloaded the complex to, at the beginning, to see, because obviously they have a in my view, they're the ones that should be taken to task when developers and builders, take a hike and close the companies and leave everybody, holding the bag, with all the defects. It's the strata managers that don't do the work, that don't do the proper reporting, with regard to their mandates in order to maintain the owners corporation afloat, in order to maintain, to make sure that you take the developer and the builder to task, without losing that. That statute of limitations that there is at the beginning of in those first 2 years, so that's what you need to do. So it's not just a matter of looking at that building. So go back to look at one or two other complexes if they built, and if they haven't built anything prior, well then alarm bells should start ringing, unless you were there from get go to completion, and you documented or you were. You had access to seeing how things were, were being built and how it was being built. But even then, you can go back to the council and look at the geotech reports and see what was being reported. I know some buildings where the geotech reports only went as far as the third basement, but when the buildings have been completed, they've come out with five basements. But so all these issues, all these things are what you need to look at. So it's not easy, more so now than ever, when the powers to be, the controlling bodies, are actually now forcing the general public to settle on buildings that they haven't been rectified, and they've been basically pushed to settle. And guess what? The law ends up being on the side of the dodgy developer and the dodgy builder. Look at Imperial Towers as to what's happened there, where where you've got people that were concerned, major defects were noted. It's not something small. It's hit the mainstream media, and yet the people have been forced to settle on a building that's full of defects, with a promissory note by the developer and the builder that they're gonna make good.
Right, and I suppose then the question is, what is the value of that promissory note, and will they make good? Will they still be around? You know, all those questions follow, doesn't it?
Well, that's correct, and that's where you go into, you know, and that's where corruption sets in, and that's where you end up, you know, looking at the historical records. As I said to a reporter only today, they reached out for some commentary on some of the buildings that I've been referring to on Twitter, and I said, look, unfortunately, I can't go on the record with the questions with those particular buildings that you're inquiring about. But you know, it's to do. You know, you just have to look at who, what was there before, what was allowable to be built there 10 years ago. What are the, you know, what are how stable the developers are and the builders are in order to, you know, to protect yourself or protect you as a consumer, as a buyer into the complex. So all this is very, very important. But when you start looking deeper into a lot of these high-rise developments, and then you start digging a little bit further, then you go into that whole realm of corruption as to, you know, who pulled what lever in which council, and which councillor got a brown paper bag, or more to the point, a reusable Aldi bag. That I hear they're being used more often now than brown paper bags, because they're old fashioned, and you know, reusable bags can hold a lot more. So you know, you've got to look at all these things as to what was able to be put on there 5 years ago, 7 years ago, and as to what's being allowable now. And then you just get to the bottom of things, and you find that there's a lot of corruption in the system that's yeah, unfortunately, we're only the commissioner is only scratching the surface as he's going, you know, from building to building, from construction site to construction site, trying to unravel the whole thing.
Yeah, I agree with that. And interestingly, I was listening to a little bit of the ICAC inquiry today with the ex New South Wales premier on the stand. But the opening argument was quite interesting, because the law actually is quite clear about corruption, and you know what you can and what you can't do, and what you should do and what you shouldn't do, right? So the point is, there are laws and there is guidance that exists. It's just that everybody goes around it.
Yeah, and it all comes back to who's got a mate and who's you know, who's got a mate on the other side, or the prosecution side, and who's got a mate on the that's even sitting on the bench. I mean, let's not hold back. Yeah. The whole legal system is diabolical. When you start getting to, you know, when you start, you know, really digging deep, it's not just the construction industry. There's a lot of it's who do you know? Who went to what school, what high school, and who's buddies with who, and who's sleeping with who?
I think we'll move on from there before I get myself into it. Even more trouble. And talking of trouble, you actually picked up on a post that I issued earlier today calling Pandora and Home Prices, right? It's actually one that was referring to a piece of journalism from Alan Kohler, who'd made the point that, of course, in Australia, there is very little transparency when it comes to things like estate agents and solicitors and property transactions. And you know, if you think of the Pandora Papers, and they were suggesting there's a lot of illicit transactions, well, guess what, the property sector in Australia is littered with it, and governments have actually deliberately not followed earlier recommendations to deal with anti-money laundering rules and regulations relating to property. And Alan's argument was, well, there's a reason for that. They've actually been lobbying very hard, and so some of that money was flowing into support the coffers of the political parties on the principle that then that will keep them from legislating. But then you started to take that further and say, well, hang on a moment, there's a whole bunch of other activities that are questionable, right? This is opening the Pandora's box.
Well, it is. You really opened up Pandora's box and a can of worms there, Martin. with that video. It was a good one, and it, you know, over a decade, almost 15 years ago, you know, I started to alluding to questions and had discussions with the REI New South Wales, the CEO and the then president of the REI, of the industry bodies, in relation to, you know, what are they doing with, you know, with, you know, with regards to opposing the government mandates to basically allow foreign investors to come in and buy entire blocks of units. I remember there was a time pre 2012, 2013, where we could only sell 20% or so of a strata title complex to foreign investors, and the rest had to be bought by local investors or owner occupiers, and there was a control on that. But then when that was diluted, when those rules and regulations were diluted, then all of a sudden people started investors started coming in droves and buying entire blocks of units. And that's why the reason why I was pining about it, the reason why I was very vocal about it, because I was telling the industry bodies back then, is what this is going to create. It basically means that we're also going to be, as real estate agents, because I was in sales at the time, that it's going to take away from food from our table, because it's marketing companies, financial institutions, financial planners, accountants, and mortgage brokers that were going to absorb all these all this clientele base, and ones that had connections with mainland China and Hong Kong and those areas. So and that became an issue, and we lost, in my opinion, we lost 30 to 40% of our business overnight when that happened. But at the same time, Martin, and this is tying up with your video on, you know, on the opening up Pandora's box, is that at that time I was also vocal in saying that you know, I was aware of the fact that foreign investors or Chinese nationals could only take out, at the most they could take out, was $50,000 in cash from China. I can't remember back then whether it was in the lifetime or it was over a period of a year. But yet people were lobbing into Sydney with suitcases full of money, and paying, you know, 30, 40, 50% LVRs, you know, only obtaining 30, 40, 50% LVRs on property, because the rest was payable in cash. And banks were obviously loaning them the balance, because, and not only were they buying new properties, Martin, but they were also buying what they weren't supposed to be buying, which is the established properties, whether they be units or houses or townhouses. If they were established, you weren't allowed to, then allowed to buy. But if you set up trust companies and trusts, obviously the bank's going to loan on the trust, because the LVR was only 50% or 60%, you know, at worst case scenario. So the banks were tripping over themselves to lend the money. So that's when I put an article on Property Observer, I think it was 8 or 9 years ago, and it was asking the question, is the government, federal government, state government, powers to be, are they complicit in this fraudulent activity? Because we're accepting money from China that they themselves weren't allowed to take out. So there was a level of criminality there, that occurred in China, and that was only, you know, and that was tied up with the purchase here. So, you know, in my opinion, federal, state, and local governments were complicit, and banks were complicit in that crime.
Absolutely. And then you can take it a bit further if you want and talk about what's called liar loans. UBS did a report quite recently on their latest survey, and they discovered that somewhere between 40 and 50% of people applying for mortgages weren't totally truthful about their income and expenditure. Right. So even that next level down on individual mortgage applications, many people are getting mortgages that are actually not necessarily accurate and complete. So from top to bottom, from the development cycle, from the purchase point of view and from the mortgage point of view, there are questions to be asked, but federal and state politicians have chosen not to implement the measures and rules that could be put in place to deal with a lot of this washing through of money. So no surprise then that, of course, last thing that people want to do is to turn the tap off.
Well, that's correct. And this is where also taking a step further, Martin, is the fact that there's been a lot of chatter on WeChat with some of the financial pundits that are in the groups. The financial planners and mortgage brokers, and obviously they speak a little bit more candidly because the groups are very closed groups. You only attend by invitation only, unlike Facebook where you can get thousands. They're limited to numbers, and there's limited to, you can only be invited to attend these groups and be a part of it. But some of the chatter is absolutely scary as to what they're saying of late, where people have lost their jobs, but yet they were able to obtain a loan approval a month ago, 2 months ago, and they've transacted on a property, and the mortgage broker slash financial planner told them that it's okay, and they've been able to obtain before it was an indicative approval, now they've been able to obtain a formal approval after valuations in order to go through. And guess what, Martin? A lot of these people don't have a business and don't have a job, or the financial circumstances have changed. So watch this space. Watch this space when it comes to loans. And this is what Lindsay goes on about. Lindsay David, he's really adamant about it, and Philip Seuss, and they talk a lot about it. And this is going to be propagated. And then you start asking yourself the questions, not only with the WeChat groups, but with the extended population, with the extended community, where people have been told that, hey, let's face it, unless you've had the jab in the second dose and you can prove that you've had these jabs and, against that little bug that keeps on creating a lot of issues around the world, and you don't have a passport mandate or you don't have a passport, well, guess what? You're either reduced in hours or reduced in pay because you can't attend the office, or you're without a job. So how many are still going to be transacting on property moving forward? I know some people are going to say, oh, the smart people won't, and you're just being silly, Edwin. But guess what? I know some people that are still going to go ahead regardless of that fact, outside of the WeChat circles, and this is scary. It's not up to me to go and dob them in to the authorities. It's up to the mortgage broker and the financial planner or the accountant that's given them, that's leading the holding their hand through this, that's being appointed. So obviously we're not going to see the outcomes of this for another year or two, possibly even 3 years, but it's scary what's happening out there, Martin.
Well, it's called root and branch criminality, right? Wherever you look, there's a problem. And talking about roots and branches, back to our hydroponics.
Well, that's right. And on that note, continuing on that note of that criminality or that whole area of what's happening with properties. I mean, and we started talking earlier on with regards to how the there's been a lot of through chatter from our legal eagles and our contacts in the law firms, that and also with the interpretation services or translators, interpreters that are acting in tribunals and with cases where a lot of these little brothers have been caught out with hydroponics grow homes or houses in order to cultivate that weed, that stinky weed that some people love and others hate, and obviously the government can't tax it, so it's illegal. But look, that's being a rise, and it should be concerning. From the hydroponic side of things, it is concerning, but more alarming is also the rise in the methamphetamines and all these other chemicals that are being cooked, that can be cooked, as they say, in small spaces, as small as an ensuite, in a two-bedroom apartment.
Yeah, makes you think, doesn't it? So it's worth just pausing and thinking, well, what could be going on next door, I suppose, right?
Exactly. So it's but it is happening, and it's being the rise, and a lot of properties are going to be affected. Obviously, with the hydroponics, it's to do more with the cultivation of marijuana, and they have to do it in high volume. So there's also a level of destruction, and guess what? A lot of the people, Martin, aren't necessarily covered. And the ones that should be more fearful are the ones that are self-managing their investment properties, particularly if it's a home and you're unable to tick all the boxes or do all the checks and balances to really scrutinize the people that are leasing your property. I mean, if professional property managers have been caught out all over the place, let alone somebody that just wants to manage the property to save a few dollars in a week that they don't want to pass on to the property manager.
Right, and that takes you right to your tip of the week, doesn't it? Because basically what you're saying is it pays you to get your property manager to go and look at your rental property.
Look, it is, and that is the tip of the week. More so because we haven't had access to, or property managers haven't had access to properties as what they would have in the past, with regards to the lockdowns and this pandemic and so forth. And this little bug's created a lot of issues in the industry. So now that there's an easing of the lockdowns, now that there's a lot, better movement, I would encourage all our viewers, whether you're here in Australia, in New Zealand, you get a hold of your property managers and you better start getting them to organize physical inspections of the properties post haste, because I can see that you're going to have issues with your insurance, with your landlord's insurance, if things haven't been done properly and your property managers haven't acted properly. Now, I know a lot of people say, I'll pay my property manager to do that, but hey, don't wait for your property manager to do it, because they're managing about 280 properties, when in the past they used to only manage about 150, and there's a lot of they're under a lot of pressure. So basically the squeaky wheel is the one that gets the oil. So make sure that you harass your property manager to produce those physical inspections ASAP, and not because of the hydroponics or these labs that are being initiated in your home, your investment property or properties, but also because, look, let's face it, property managers haven't been doing a lot of work anyway, and they haven't checked to see how things are, and people have been cooped up in the homes. In the properties for weeks on end, months on end, and if adults go feral in enclosed environments, let alone pets and children where they don't have the space that they need to stretch out and release the energy. So you can only imagine how some of these rental properties are looking like. With all the pressure that's been on the families.
Well, of course, for some months it wasn't possible, right, to make any visits at all to those types of properties. So you could say that some tenants potentially have had a very free run at a time when, of course, they're probably more likely to be in the property rather than outside the property. So the risk of damage and other things is probably higher. But I also want to make the point, Edwin, that many of the tenancy agreements that I've seen don't necessarily make it transparent as to the frequency that visits are allowed. So it's an interesting bit of a minefield as to how frequently can you visit, what notice do you have to give, all those sorts of things. So get talking to your property manager and get them to start working.
Look, the rule of thumb is, the rule of thumb that good property managers run on, and my team, this is how we used to run. You do an inspection, within the first 3 months, and you do a report, and that gives you an idea as to how the tenancy is going to move along. If you're satisfied with that, with that inspection, well, then you can postpone the next one within 6 months. If you're not satisfied with it, what we used to do was we used to give them 21 days to rectify any issues or to settle in, and we would conduct another inspection. Effectively, you can do 4 inspections a year under the regulations. So, once the property managers and our property management team were proactive, guess what? There were times where our property managers, where they would not book in an inspection spot on the 6 month, and the tenants themselves were ringing up and say, "Hey, are you going to come around and have a look? It's going to be 6 months on Tuesday. Are you going to come around and inspect? I'll be waiting for you." So you get, it was really a working together because the tenants themselves took pride in, and we had a lot of properties in the inner west that were, strata title properties with, I would say, without exaggeration, Martin, 30% of them, we convinced our landlords to allow for pets. And we're talking, townhouses and apartments. And the properties were pristine. So it comes back to the efficiency and the proactiveness of the property management team to determine how properties are going to be looked after, whether or not you're going to have issues. A lot of property managers blame the tenants, and I think that's ludicrous. I think that's wrong. A lot of the blame comes back to the property managers that are lazy, and they don't do the periodic inspections, and expect the properties to be pristine. And the tenants don't say, "But I thought this is what you expected anyway. I mean, what do you want?" But the other reason why people should be organising inspections, Martin, it's not only because families have been cooped up indoors for a long time, and perhaps with pets as well, but also with the weather hasn't been the best in terms of it's been very we've had torrential rains, we've had a lot of rain throughout Sydney, and so there are maintenance issues not only with the weather but also once again because the properties have been occupied for a lot more than what they normally have been, and so then there could be other issues, and there could be trip hazards and other sorts of hazards that are responsibility of the property managers, are responsibilities of the landlords as well, that need to be addressed ASAP.
Yeah, great advice, Edwin. And as you say, particularly now with the inclement weather and other things as well, plus the long time since the last inspection. But you have to be proactive, right? You can't just sit on your hands and wait for your property manager to pick up the phone and say, "I'm going to do it," right? You've got to actually push them, make sure they do.
Well, that's correct. So, that's the tip of the week. I hope people are going to enjoy this tip. And moving forward, just stay focused on the numbers, and if you don't follow me on Twitter, and you're on Twitter, reach out, and I try to share the numbers twice a week now that things are changing rapidly, and paying a little bit a lot more closer attention as to those numbers and to see how things are going to pan out. But particularly now that we've reached the 80% target that we were supposed to reach as a state in terms of vaccinations, and there's going to be more freedom. So with that people are going to be more or less concerned about fears, and going to be more open to listing their homes and more open for inspections, and also once the borders, the state borders do open up, they're also going to be starting to do their own searches, because once they sell, they've got to buy as well.
That's right, Edwin. I think we're going to be very interesting for the next few months. Interest rates potentially going up, significant rise in listings, mortgages a little bit harder to come by simply because of the APRA guidance and other concerns about too loose a lending. Going to be very interesting. So we'll have to come back and compare notes next week and see how it goes.
Well, definitely. Looking forward to it, man.
Thank you. Take care. See you soon.
Cheers.